future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome in, Houston. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 is the bullpen here with the producers of ESPN Radio. Myself, Brian McDonald, Andrew Carlson, and Sean Mapes. No Josh Chavans. Josh Chavans has decided to become a full-fledged Florida man and move back to the Miami area. So we wish Josh all the best with becoming or returning to being a Florida man. But we move on. It's good to be back on the air. I think Sean and I were talking before the show. We had one show in November. And I think this is only our second show together since Texas OU all the way back in October out at that car dealership in Angleton.
Sounds about right. You know, I think we're only going to have maybe one show in December, potentially two.
I know we're off next week.
We're
off next week for sure because of the Aggies bowl game. Nor Aggies basketball, it's something Aggies.
Yeah, it's the Halal Guys Classic. I would like you to show some respect to one of the... Premier.
Oh, that's right. You're going to that game, aren't
you?
Yeah.
Yes. Texas A&M versus the University of Houston. One of the premier pre-conference play tournaments that we have, or not even tournaments, classics that we have.
Sean, if you had to rank pre-conference play tournaments, where would the Halal Guys Classic rank?
Okay, so, I mean, it's not disrespectful to say Maui's number one.
I would say, yeah,
Maui's
probably
number one. What about the Battle for Atlantis?
I don't know. This one, that's just a Battle for Atlantis. This is the Halal Guys Classic. Man, the PK-80 is always fun. Phil Knight just throwing a basketball tournament for himself is always fun. But
is a true status of wealth when you could just throw a basketball tournament for yourself.
It is.
That is amazing.
It is hard. I mean, originally it was for his birthday, but his birthday isn't in like November. It's in like May, and you can't have a basketball tournament in May.
It's first half birthday.
He might have enough money to make that happen.
Yeah.
He might have enough money to make that happen. Yeah, so that will be a big, because Texas is playing LSU the same day, right? Are you going to that, Sean?
No, I don't plan on it.
Okay, all right. Well, I guess it'll be me and Sean that day, maybe. Or actually, that's next week, so we're all off. It doesn't matter. All right, that'll be it for the college basketball pre-conference play tournament talk today. All the bullpen. Texans-Jets on Sunday. Let's get into that conversation. Texans, I don't have the line in front of me. I assume the Texans are favored. Do either of you happen to know the line off the top of your head? I can stall and look that
they
up if you
favorites.
Don't have it in front of,
so
in front of
they
you.
Are still favorites, but the line opened at 6 points, which the Texans on the road is 6-point favorites, to me is just almost unfathomable.
I see now it's 3.5.
It's 3.5, so it's dropped considerably from that. And my guess would be the weather is going to have a significant role to play as a part of that as to why it dropped, just because in an ideal circumstance, I do believe that the Texans are at least 6 points better than the Jets in New York. I would probably take the Texans in that sort of scenario. But with what the weather is going to be, I can totally understand why people have bet that line down significantly.
So, yeah, let's get into some, because I think on paper, you know, the Jets have been such a disaster this year with their quarterback carousel, plugging in quarterbacks and then other quarterbacks saying they don't want to play or whatever the hell's going on there in New Jersey. So let's start with some of the concerns, though, that we might have as Texans fans going into this Jets matchup, because I definitely don't think that this is a game that the Texans won comfortably. And really, they haven't won any games comfortably. You look at their, I believe it was their last six games. Every game was decided during that time in the last 30 seconds of the game, including, I think, three field goals as time expired. So one of the concerns, and I'll skip to the bottom because you brought it up, Andrew, the weather report is expected to be steady rain. I mean, it's not, even though it's New York, it's not going to be the temperature. I believe it's supposed to be in the 50s. But there's supposed to be steady rain throughout the game and wind at 10 to 15 miles an hour with gusts up to 30. And that's the biggest concern because, I mean, I think most of these guys are used to playing in cold, even though it's not going to be that cold. They're used to playing in rain. But if, as a quarterback, especially a team that throws the ball as deep as the Texans do on a regular basis, Sean, if you're going up against the weather with 30-mile-an-hour wind gusts, there's not a lot you could do passing the ball deep with 30-mile-an-hour wind gusts.
No. And you'd hope that if anyone's used to throwing in inclement weather with 30-mile-per-hour, specifically 30-mile-per-hour wind gusts, it would be C.J. Stroud. Former Big Ten quarterback. He's gone to Evanston, Illinois. He's gone to Madison, Wisconsin. and been able to throw the ball. So you'd hope that there's some, I don't know, resistance or some kind of weather. He's used to weather a little bit, but it will be a game where it's a classic. You kind of just had to run the ball given the weather. And that really, I don't know if it plays into the Jets' hands more as it just plays out of the Texans' hands.
Well, good news, Andrew. If the Texans have to run the ball, Damian Pierce is averaging 3 yards a carry.
Well, I mean, if you run it four straight times, that's a first down, B-Mac.
That's true.
All right? So I don't see the problem here. You just go for it. Run Damian Pierce every single time. But to me, when I see this game, when you look at the weather, I don't think the Texans need more than one, maybe two touchdown drives to win this game. That's how pathetic the Jets' offense is. So honestly, if all it takes is one or two successful drives, look, all you got to do is just deal with this Jets defense that has been phenomenal for basically the entirety of the season. I think at some point they're going to just totally lose hope and give up like we saw the Broncos do last season just because their offense is so totally inept that the defense gets to the point where they're just like, why are we even bothering anymore? But the Jets haven't gotten to that point yet, and it's going to be a challenge for the Texans because if the Jets aren't if the Texans are not capable of putting together one or two of those scoring drives, it's going to be just a miserable, miserable game of football for us to watch.
Yeah, it's not going to be an exciting, I think, you know, offensive spectacle, obviously,
bet
to watch
the
on the field. Yeah, it definitely bet the under. And you mentioned how bad the Jets' offense has been. I wish I had the exact numbers in front of me, but someone posted like kind of what their expected points per play or one of those kind of efficiency numbers. And they ranked near the bottom in the last like two decades right there with the Josh Rosen Cardinals, the Jimmy Clausen Panthers, last year's Broncos with Russell Wilson when they were averaging like 15 points a game. So this, you're right. I think if the Texans, if they score two touchdowns, I think the Texans win.
Yeah.
I have no doubt in my mind. If they score one, I still think they've got a chance.
The Jets haven't scored 20 points since October 15th. They have not gotten to 20. And the only time they got to 20 points was when the Eagles let them score. So that way they would have a chance to get the ball back and then attempt an onside kick. That is the only time since October 15th that the Jets have scored 20 points or more.
We've done like two shows since then.
Yeah, since
we've
then.
We've done more shows than they've scored 20 points. That's right, Sean.
13, 6, 12, 6, 13, 8.
Yikes. God, I mean, I knew from a distance the Jets' offense has been bad. I mean, I've suffered through having Garrett Wilson in our fantasy league here with producers. So I know their offense has been bad, but I didn't realize because I don't watch their games, you know, start to finish every week because I don't hate myself that much. I just, until you pointed out their points per game like there over the last, I guess, since you said since October 15th, I didn't realize they'd been that historically bad. But let's get back to maybe some of the other concerns the Jets could actually pose to the Houston Texans on Sunday. Andrew, you mentioned the Jets' defense. Their pass defense has been great. The Jets right now rank third in passing yards allowed per game, fifth in quarterback rating allowed, and fourth in percentage of passes they intercept. And, you know, they're also, pressure rate. The Jets right now are first in hurry percentage, first in pressure percentage, and third in knockdown percentage. So going into this game with no Dalton Schultz, no Tank Dell, no Titus Howard. George Fant, we think he's going to play. He practiced in full on Friday, but he had two DMPs before that. So we'll see on that. He is listed as questionable currently. It really is kind of an interesting proposition where the Texans' strength is their passing game. Their weakness is their run, but the way you beat the Jets is the run, and it's going to be hard to pass on them not only because of the defense but the weather. It's going to be interesting to see what Bobby Slowick tries to do because their strengths really don't line up well with what the Jets do well.
Yeah, that's why it's going to be such a massive test. And credit to the Texans and C.J. Stroud. They've typically found a way to overcome a lot of the tests that they've faced thus far in the season, but from a defensive perspective, this is going to be as difficult a challenge CJ is going to face as he sees the rest of the season. The only one that's going to come close or compare is the Browns.
Sure.
Which, obviously, we all know how incredible the Browns' defense has been so far this year. But, man, it's just not going to be pretty. And as much as it sucks to say, this is going to be a Devin Singletary and Damian Pierce game. And for any Texans fans, myself included, that is not music. Whatever the opposite of music to my ears is, nails on a chalkboard, that's what that is.
I think Sean would like to point out that it'd be an establish the run game would play right into the soul of my 40-year-old age. I think he pointed out the last time we did the show.
Yes, they should broadcast this game in standard definition. That's what they should do. The more we talk about it, the more and more I'm like, man, this is hashtag real football that's about to get played on Sunday.
If we don't see that hashtag trending on Twitter, I'm going to be very disappointed. So, Sean, I mean, we just talked about how good the Jets' pass defense, no Tank Dell, no Dalton Schultz, going up against a great Jets defense, the weather problems. How are you feeling about the Texans' passing offense given the circumstances they walk into on Sunday?
Not good. It'd be one thing if it's just 30 mile per hour wind gust. It would be one thing if it's just the Jets secondary with Sauce Gardner. It'd be one thing if they just didn't have Tank Dell. But it's all three of those things that are going to be working against the Texans this week. And so, like Andrew said, it is going to be a real test. It's going to be a real test of C.J. Stroud. Is he one of these quarterbacks that can have everything go against him and he still either plays well or even just wins the game? That's the real key to me. And I think he has a pretty good chance because, like we said, the Jets' offense isn't exactly scaring you. And what you need to avoid when you play an offense like the Jets, when you're on offense, is turnovers and giving them the ball in advantageous field position. And that's something that C.J. Stroud has done a good job of taking care of the ball this year. And so that gives me some hope in the passing game. Again, this is a very old-timey way of looking at it, that one of the positives in the Texans passing game is that they won't turn the ball over. I'm not saying that they'll move the ball. I'm saying that I do not think that C.J. Stroud is going to be throwing it to the other team.
Well, that's important because, as we've talked about, probably the only way I feel like the Jets have a good chance to score a touchdown in this game is if you give them a short field. So let's carry some of this conversation over to the other side of the break. We'll also, later in the hour, get into the Astros' lack of moves during this offseason. The Rockets finally get a road win. And in hour number two, Brad Kellner, formerly here with ESPN 97.5, now with Texas Sports Unfiltered. Did I get that right? Texas Sports Unfiltered will join us at 1 o'clock to talk about the Longhorns playing in the Sugar Bowl against Washington and all his different thoughts on the college football playoff. That and more when we return on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. Aya cane powder.
It is odorless, tasteless, dissolves instantly in liquid, and is among the more deadly poisons known to man.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Welcome back in. Again, it's Sean Mapes, Andrew Carlson, and myself, Brian McDonald, back for the first time in a few weeks, and then we're off again next week. But I think Sean and I might be here on the 23rd, right before Christmas, so hopefully we'll have more celebrating to do with the Houston Texans, a few more wins on the schedule. Can they get a win this weekend against the Jets? We're continuing that conversation right now. We spent last segment talking about some of the difficulties the Texans will have on offense, facing not only a great Jets pass defense, but the weather's also going to be concerned with rain and strong winds. Some of the other Texans questions I think that need answering going into this Jets game. Starting, with the obvious thing with the Houston Texans, no Tank Dell. He's out for the season with the fractured fibula. This was kind of a hot topic all week on the station, as, you know, I think everyone would expect it to be. But quickly, before we get into how they, replace the production of Tank Dell, did you guys have any problem, Andrew? I'll start with you, with Tank Dell being in between the tackles and blocking on the play where he got hurt.
I have a problem with it solely from the perspective of look, Jeremy has instigated a lot of fights on Twitter over the past week.
Shout out to Laramie Tunsil.
But I do agree with him where if Tank is the type of guy where he wants to help his team so much that he's going to put his head some places, sometimes where it necessarily shouldn't be, like blocking in that moment or trying to block in that moment, just don't give him the responsibility or give him the chance to put himself in harm's way. And I'm never going to fault someone for being a good teammate and for doing their utmost or what they believe is their utmost to try and help their team succeed. I'm not going to fault Tank at all for putting his head in there and trying to make a block.
Yeah, I don't blame Tank for trying to make the play. That's going to be his instinct as a football player. I'm sure it's something he's done before, and that's just kind of, like I said, the instinct that he's going to have on the field there. My problem, and I heard this point brought up when in a conversation between Paul Gallant and DJ Bieniemy, the ESPN.com beat reporter for the Houston Texans. And DJ's point was, you know, if you put Nico in that same spot, if you put Robert Woods in the same spot, their legs breaks either way. And that is a fair point. But I would argue, and we saw this some early in the season, I believe in the preseason as well, where Tank Dell was left in spots where he was even pass blocking at times. My point is, like, DJ's whole thing was, well, you're just saying that you want Nico Collins to break his leg instead of Tank Dell, or you just want Noah Brown to break his leg instead of Tank Dell. It's not necessarily that. It's more so Tank Dell is, you know, what, 5'7", 165? It's not that I'm trying to protect him because he's frail and he can't be in between the tackles for that reason, but he's 5'7", 165. He's not going to get a lot of push as a blocker. So, I mean, it's sure, at some point it is avoiding risk, but it's also putting Tank Dell at his size in a situation where he's trying to move a pile as a blocker is not your most efficient way of trying to get Damian Pearson to the end zone on that play.
Well, he's your most important offensive player outside of C.J. Stroud. And would you see, and this is the point that Jeremy brought up on Twitter earlier this week, would you see Tyreek Hill in there doing that? Absolutely not. And I'm not saying that Tank Dell is Tyreek Hill or that he should be treated like Tyreek Hill, but he is the most important skill player on the offense, and I don't really think it's all that questionable. Do you agree with me?
No, I mean, I guess you could. I mean, there's obviously an argument for Nico, but I wouldn't push back on it. I definitely think you can make the argument for Tank Dell.
So with that being the case, just do not put your most important pieces in those sort of situations. That's just how I view it, but at the same time, I understand why the Texans operated the way that they did, why Tank Dell did what he did. It's just a situation that I think could and should have been avoided.
Sean, I mean, obviously you heard that whole conversation, the back and forth with Paul and DJ. I guess that was on Tuesday or Wednesday. How do you feel about the whole situation?
I do agree that at a certain point, football is just football, and like anyone who's going to be in that Tank Dell spot was going to break their leg. It to me was a little bit of the risk reward element of it, of like, it is a risky position to put someone who weighs 165 pounds in, and the reward is what exactly? It's just having them on the field as someone that the defense needs to be aware of in a goal line situation. To me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to be running that play. And I don't know if, well, no, I know the blame goes to Bobby Slowick for doing it. Cause like Andrew said, that like Tank Dell, if he's out there and that's the play that's going to be run, he's going to try to block him. Like, he's going to try to make the play. It's just, if you're Bobby Slowick, you have to do a better job of kind of protecting your guys.
Save the player from himself, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you pointed out Tyreek, and I saw Jeremy kind of pointing out he went through like an entire game in these sort of situations that Tank was in to see what Tyreek's role was on similar plays, and basically he was lined up outside and never came near the push or whatever. So I think you can have, I believe you mentioned, Andrew, like he needs to at least be on the field as a distraction or as a decoy, or at least maybe that was the thought process by Bobby Slowick, which is fine. I get that. If Tank Dell's on the field, then certainly the defense is going to approach that play differently than if he's not. But at least have the assignment be stand on the outside and look cool. Don't go near. Don't have a motion in and act as somebody trying to push Damian Pearson.
Or if you motion him all the way back.
Or motion him all the way
around. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't like that play overall. And Bobby Sloak overall has obviously done a great job, but moments like that, and then obviously the continued use, and again, sorry, Sean, for the Longhorn violence here, but the continued use of Andrew Beck is a little frustrating at times. But all right, let's get into some of these other Texans questions we have going into the Jets game before we get into the Astros next segment. Again, Brad Kellner, former host here at ESPN Radio, will join us at the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, to talk about the Texas Longhorns in the college football playoff. And, of course, in hour two, we'll have the return of Mount Rushmore Plus One and something a little new for Mount Rushmore Plus One, something Sean and Andrew don't know yet, but they'll find out here at 1:30. So when facing the Jets on Sunday, they obviously, with their quarterback problems, don't have a lot of offensive output. Aren't capable. If the Texans get to 17, it feels like the game's over. But when you're looking at the Texans defense and what the Jets offense has to offer, really it's two guys. It's Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall. Andrew, if you're the Texans and you're looking at the Jets offense, which side of that, Garrett Wilson or Breece Hall, what are you trying to take away from the Jets?
I mean, if
or do you even care?
I'm going to be honest with you, BMAC. I don't think that either are a significant threat. I would just say that maybe Breece Hall is the slightly bigger issue just because of the fact that he has the capability to...
He's a home run hitter.
Yeah, he has the capability to break one, but he hasn't broke one in a while. And if you look at his rushing stats over the past 5 or 6 weeks, they are absolutely abysmal. And Garrett Wilson is a total afterthought to me, to be completely frank, because of the fact that Zach Wilson is the one that's throwing him the football. Zach Wilson has... Look, he may be a slight upgrade on Tim Boyle, or whatever
Tim
else.
Tim Boyle was bad.
Brett Rypien, that they've signed to the roster now, who we haven't even seen in a Jets uniform. But you should not fear a single aspect of this Jets offense. The only thing that could even remotely come back to bite you is if Breece Hall takes the ball, goes off to the outside, and he breaks one. And as long as the Texans are keyed in on that, I don't see any way that the Jets are scoring more than 10, 13 points.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sean.
That's exact. Like, Breece Hall, all Zach Wilson has to do is hand the ball to Breece Hall, and he can make a play. For Garrett Wilson to make a play, Zach Wilson will need to throw the ball to him, and I am not very scared of that. I'm not scared of the possibility. You know what? I want Zach Wilson to throw it 40 times. Because guess what? We're worried about the wind and the rain and the weather when it comes to C.J. Stroud. Imagine if we're talking about Zach Wilson having to throw
point.
This
That's
weather.
That's a good point, yeah. Zach Wilson also has to go against that same wind and weather. Yeah, I think I'll make it unanimous. You mentioned it, Andrew, the breakaway ability of Breece Hall. I mean, obviously, it seems like the most obvious thing to say ever, but, I mean, stop Breece and force Zach Wilson to beat you through the air in a game where when there's high winds and when there's rain. It doesn't seem like there should be any other game plan other than that.
Yeah, I mean, so I mentioned how poor Breece Hall has been recently. Since rushing for 177 yards against the Broncos on October 8th, if we go through his game log, 39 yards on the ground, 17 yards on the ground, 50, 28, 23, 25, 16. He has the best he has done in the past 2 months is a 50-yard game in a loss against the Chargers.
I think that signifies that the Jets opponents have known exactly what we're talking about. It's like, let's take away Breece Hall and the Jets can't beat us.
Yeah. Their offense is totally incapable of winning a football game. So all you need to do is not hand the game to them. And we talked a lot in the first segment about how the weather can change things. But as long as you are responsible with the football, like Sean mentioned, and as long as you don't give them incredibly short fields on a consistent basis, even if you do give them short fields, their offense isn't really capable of moving the football. Just do not hand it to them on the goal line or give their defense or special teams an opportunity to score, and you're going to walk away with a win and be 8-5 at the end of the week.
One more thing I want to get into before we make our pick on this game. Devin Singletary, I guess it's been a few weeks now, but he had back-to-back really good games, including, I believe it was the Bengals game where he went for 150 rushing yards. Then Damian Pierce returned, and I think a lot of us were probably hoping that Devin Singletary continued to be the lead back, especially since Damian Pierce averaging 3 yards a carry, 3.0, while Devin Singletary, not an amazing, you know, yards per attempt number. It's only 4.1, but still obviously a full yard better than Damian Pierce. But this last week in the Broncos game, it basically went right back to what happened before the Damian Pierce injury. Pierce getting 15 carries, averaging 2.7 per carry. Devin Singletary getting just 8, and he was at 4.5 per touch in that last week's game against the Denver Broncos. Sean, I mean, I think we were all hopeful that maybe Singletary would, you know, the coaches would see the same thing we saw, that Devin Singletary was the more efficient runners, but it went right back to Damian Pierce. How are you feeling about the running back split right now?
I would like it just flipped.
Singletary getting 15 and Pierce getting 8.
I do think that there's room for both these guys in the offense, and that Damian Pierce shouldn't be completely out of the game plan. And
I mean, I will say Tank Dell's never broken his leg on a Devin Singletary carry.
That is true.
So, that's just analytics.
And he definitely will not. Well, well, he probably year, will not on Sunday.
No, probably not.
Yeah, he does have 2 legs, though.
if he gets his other leg broken on the sideline because Pierce gets shoved out of bounds and he rolls into him, I'm going to lose it.
But Devin Singletary should be the lead back for this team. Like you said, 4.1 yards versus
3.0,
which is falling, by the way, because he had 2.7.
Yeah, 2.7, yeah.
So I don't know. I was watching the game. I was like, man, it seems like it's been a while since we got in Singletary, and I didn't see any injury or any, like, him, yeah, the trainers looking at him. So I would just want more Singletary.
I don't get it, Andrew. I mean, it feels like it's kind of it almost feels like a Dusty Baker situation where he's just stubbornly sticking with, quote-unquote, his guys and ignoring the fact that Devin Singletary, and to make the Astros comparison in this case, Yonder Diaz, is a far better player at this point. I mean, Pierce doesn't seem to fit the scheme. He was drafted by a different coaching staff to fit a different scheme. He doesn't seem to fit it. Singletary's far more efficient. I don't know why we would have this split so far in the favor of Damian Pierce still.
Yeah, I don't particularly get it. I'm 100% in agreement with both of you guys that I would like to see the share sort of flip from what we saw it be last week. But the reality is Bobby Slowick seems to be someone that sticks to his guns a little bit. Like, I'm not saying all the way, I'm not going to go full in on the Dusty Baker comparison, but we've seen him do the same thing in some of these fourth and short situations.
The fullback dives.
Pretty consistently throughout the entire season. So I think that Bobby has given us enough reason with the performance as a whole to trust his judgment on things, but it is really curious. I'm going to be interested to see what it looks like in a game where the Texans are probably going to have to run the ball more than they've done maybe in any other game this season.
Certainly. All right. Well, quickly before we go to break, we'll start with you, Sean. Make your pick. Texans, Jets, what you got?
Texans, 17. Jets, 15.
Ooh. I think that's close to an over. Andrew, what do you got?
I would go Texans 17, Jets 13.
I'll split the difference. Texans 17, Jets 14. Oh, there we go. Very riveting there with the all our picks.
Incredible. Basically
they're not going to be able to score. So there's only so many numbers you can choose.
Yeah, no, it does feel like we're picking between 3 possible outcomes there. All right, next segment of the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. We're going to get into the Astros offseason and the declaration from GM Dana Brown that they will not trade Alex Bregman. That and more when we return on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. Oh, it's you people.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Huh?
This is the Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mapes, Andrew Carlson, myself, Brian McDonald. If you want to join in on the conversation, you can call into the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Any thoughts on the Texans-Jets, on what the Astros have not done so far in the offseason, and the Rockets finally getting a road win last night in Denver? Make sure to give us a call. Again, HRMP listener line is 713-780-3776. So, transitioning to the Astros right now, not a lot has happened right now. The Astros have added a couple of basically death pieces. They've added a backup catcher, Victor Carantini. He's been all right. I mean, he's been better than Maldi at the plate. I think that's kind of the
hope. Is that the bar here?
That's the
bar.
Is that
the bar?
Yeah.
Better than 160 or 180 at the plate with an OPS Under 600?
Look, man, I'm reaching. I don't know. I'm trying not to be depressed by what the Astros haven't done so far. So Victor Caratini, I mean, he's not – he last year he had 259. He had a 711 OPS. I mean, it's fine, but it's way better than Maldi's 191 and 606. So, look, he's probably going to play, what, one game a week? That's probably – I would hope that that's the plan. I hope that's the plan. That Yonner Diaz is catching 4 out of 5, and then Caratini's got the other game. I don't know who he would be the personal catcher for, but it doesn't really matter to me. The other move they made, they traded for a reliever. Dylan Coleman came to the Astros from the Royals. He had a pretty good 2022 season at the major league level with the Kansas City Royals. Had a 2.78 ERA over 68 innings in 2022, but last season, not great. At the major league level, in only 18 innings, his ERA was 8.84, and it wasn't just bad luck because his FIP, his fielding independent pitching, was 7.02, and they sent him down to AAA, and his ERA in AAA was still 4.70. It wasn't like it was a massive improvement. It still was a bad number that you wouldn't want at the major league level. So really, you got a reliever that you hope only comes in bad situations, and you got a catcher who's going to start once a week. Yeah, that's what the Astros have done.
You've got a reclamation project that you're bringing into the bullpen, and on top of that, you've got somebody who should be an upgrade at the catcher spot for the ABs that you're going to give him. Is that enough?
No, it's really concerning. We've heard this, you know, before the offseason started. I think a lot of us had these concerns, you know, last offseason, this offseason, about the Houston Astros and owner Jim Crane treating that first that first tax line as a hard salary cap. I mean, the Astros have basically done nothing while, you know, teams around them that are trying to get to where the Astros are, like the New York Yankees, go out and add Alex Verdugo and Juan Soto. I mean, the Yankees got a whole lot better while the Astros add, you know, a catcher who starts once a week and a bullpen arm who may or may not even be at the major league level. So this tidbit, to me, just sent off alarm bells. This comes from Chandler Rome from The Athletic in conversations he's had with GM Dana Brown. So it says here, Crane has exceeded the competitive balance tax once during his ownership tenure, but not since 2020. Asked Monday whether Crane had given him authority to cross it this winter, Dana Brown replied, quote, "We haven't had that discussion yet, but I'm sure at some point we will. But I do understand that this guy is competitive. He wants to win. And so we'll have that talk a little bit later." What? It's December 5th. The winter meetings are over. How can you have not had a conversation about what your budget is?
BMAC, they've definitely had that conversation.
Yeah, it's a flat-out lie, but it's just...
This reminds me so much of the early Tillman years when he first became the owner of the Rockets, and it was the constant issue of the Rockets were not going to go above the salary cap, above that like hard tax, that up towards the hard cap. In the NBA, you've got a soft cap and you've got a hard cap. They were not willing to exceed the soft cap to go into the luxury tax to compete with the Warriors. And that's why they lost Trevor Ariza in the second season of those Chris Paul, James Harden-led teams, is because of the fact that they simply weren't – Tillman was simply not willing to pay and keep that team around. And this is kind of exactly what that sounds like, right? Where, you know, we know that we have a good nucleus and a good roster, but we're not willing to – dip our toe a little bit deeper into the pool to, you know, make the investments that would be required to take it from really good to exceptional. Now, I say that, and I think it was Fangraphs or Zips or somebody else put out a projection that the Astros are still projected to get the second most wins in all of Major League Baseball this season. So I'm moaning about something knowing full and well that the Astros still have a World Series caliber roster, but it's just so frustrating knowing that there's some tinkering that can be done, and I don't think it would be all that onerous on Jim Crane to make it happen.
Yeah, and Sean, weigh in on this, but it feels like I would push back a little bit, and I get what you're saying, Andrew, but if they were coming off like a 106-win season, then sure, I could maybe buy into, okay, they just need a minor tinker, but look, this team eventually got to Game 7 of the ALCS and then broke our heart. But before that, it was a 92-win team. It was a team that didn't, clinch the division to the very last day of the season. So we've seen a little bit of slippage. Some of it was injury, but we've seen slippage with this team. So I don't think they're in the same luxurious position they've been in before, where they don't have to add players to this roster to continue to play at the level they've wanted to.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it's going to come down to the injury luck. 2 years ago, they were the luckiest team in all of Major League Baseball when it came to injuries. Last season, they were damn near the exact opposite, at least when it comes to true impact players. So I would be willing to bet that Dana Brown, Jim Crane, and crew are betting on some level of regression to the mean in terms of we are going to be a healthier team this season, which I personally, I don't think that is not a line of thinking that I would like my team to be following.
Not a team that is not a team that has Lance McCullers on its team. I don't see how you could possibly say that. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, Dana Brown has talked about how Jake Myers, of all people, Sean, is going to get the first crack at playing center field. I mean, it's got to be him or Dubé. If they don't sign a left fielder that would put Chaz in center, then it's going to have to be Dubon or Jake Myers. But it's hard to take a team serious when they say we want to win at the highest levels, but then they tried out Jake Myers in center field.
Yeah, that to me is the most damning part of this Astros offseason, where it looks like it's not going to be a super busy offseason, is this isn't the 2019 team. This isn't the 2017-18. This isn't a team that has, like, no holes. What can we upgrade on? This team's awesome. Like you said, it's a 92-win baseball team. Like, there is a hole, and it's either left field or center field, depending on how you want to use Chaz McCormick. And notice I said how you want to use Chaz McCormick, not Jake Myers. That to me is the, like, that's where you feel Jim Crane's reluctance to go over the luxury tax, is the fact that they're not bringing in an extra, or not an extra, a starting bat for one of these outfield positions. That to me is where, you know, if in June, July, we're talking about, like, man, another rough start for the Astros season, this is kind of like last year, da-da-da, that's what we're going to look at, is the inactivity specifically at that position.
Yeah, because even if you want to sell me that Jake Myers returns to his, what was his, 2021 form when he was a pretty good player, if you want to sell me that we get the best version of Dubon, which at times last year was pretty damn good and worthy of starting, that's fine, but they're one injury away from the offense falling apart. So there's so much more we could get into with Alex Bregman here and the future of this Astros roster, because it's looking like if they stand pat here and they don't add any talent either with a trade to bring in young prospects or a signing to bring in a veteran ready to produce at their major league level, it feels like you're kind of looking just a couple years down the road when all these contracts for JV and Fromber and Bregman and Altuve and Tucker and Presley, the list goes on and on. When all these contracts start to expire and you're starting to say, I can see where the window to win a championship is starting to close. And that's it's frustrating as an Astros fan.
Yeah, and that's why they're going to have to make some really tough decisions from a trade standpoint probably in the next year or two. Because you're going to get to the point where all these internal solutions that Dana Brown keeps talking about are simply not going to be good enough to keep the team competitive at the level that they've been for the last 6-7 years. It's just simply not going to be possible. And this is a discussion we can have another day on another show, but they are going to have to start making some really, really tough decisions with some of these guys who are going to be coming up for free agency, because you cannot keep letting every single player walk and expect to remain competitive by just churning up the next guy on the supply line from the minor leagues. It's just not possible.
Not from a minor leagues that, depending on where you look, is ranked pretty much bottom three. Like, whatever ranking site you look at, they may be 30th, they may be 27th, but they're bottom three across the board. Yeah, I mean, as you pointed out, Andrew, we'll go to break and talk about the Rockets here on the other side. But you can sign free agents, that can work.
Yeah.
You can re-sign your own guys, that can work. Or you could trade these guys to bring in prospects like the Rays do that are nearly ready to compete at the minor league or the major league level. Problem is, the Astros are doing none of those. You got to pick one and make that your strategy. The Astros seem to be just standing pat and accepting that their window is going to close here in a couple years. We'll have more time to get into the Astros in future weeks. It's a long offseason. Pitchers and catchers, of course, don't report until February. But next segment, we got to talk about the Houston Rockets winning the season series from the defending NBA champion Denver Nuggets and getting their first road win with an impressive win in Denver last night. That when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Insert random audio clip now.
Mr. Campbell, send out the amendment is acceptable to the author. Is there objection to the opposite amendment? And the chair has done the amendment. Amendment is adopted.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. It's The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Brian McDonald has been demoted back behind the glass.
I didn't know this was a demotion.
Oh. Well,
you didn't inform me of that part. When we switched seats, you didn't tell me, oh, hey, this is a demotion for you. You left that part of the information
out.
Well,
I'm driving the show now, so turn off your mic. I'm driving the show now.
I appreciate the heel turn there, Sean.
It got to. We're going from a team whose championship window is maybe closing to a team whose championship window maybe opening, Andrew Carlson. This Rockets team are riding high off of a Wednesday victory over the Oklahoma City Thunder, 110-101. And last night, they go into Denver and they take down the defending champions, 114-106. Their first road win of the season. Their third win of the season against the Denver Nuggets.
They've only played the Nuggets and Lakers so far this season. Outside of this game against the Thunder on Wednesday, I swear they've only played the Lakers and Nuggets this season.
They have, and playing the Nuggets have been very good to the Houston Rockets. They take the season series 3-1, and not only is this the first road win for the Rockets, this is also the first home loss for the Nuggets this year. This is also the first home loss the Nuggets have had against a Western Conference team while Jokic, Murray, Porter, and Gordon all play. While they have their starting lineup, basically. This is the first time they've lost one of these games. So it was kind of things were looking bleak for the Rockets last week when the best thing you had to look at as a Rockets fan was Ime Udoka calling LeBron James a soft boy and saying stop bitching to him. Soft ass boy. That's what he said to LeBron James, and that was really what the major talking point was. It wasn't the fact that they lost by 25 to the Lakers on the road. So to get these wins, not just against Denver last night, but also against OKC, a team that's kind of ahead in the process, in the rebuilding process, as you, do these wins tell you anything, Andrew, about this team?
Yeah, these wins tell me that this team should, at a minimum, be a play-in team, and I think should realistically be shooting a little bit higher than that. Maybe, okay.
Top six?
No, okay, I take it back. I forgot the 7 and 8 were part of the the play-in equation. So they should be hosting games in the play-in tournament. Okay. I think that should be the goal by the end of the season. And everything that they've done shows me that they are totally capable of that. This game, this win against Denver, it was much, much more comprehensive than the scoreline would indicate. Yeah, they were up by 25 points in the fourth quarter and let the Nuggets go on an 18-0 run.
They didn't score for six. The Rockets did not score a point for 6 minutes in the fourth quarter.
Sean, they did not make a field goal for the last 8:26 of the game.
That is like,
and still won.
And they still won.
That is really the type of graphics because Space City Home Network, right?
I think
Space
you
City
got
Home
it.
Network,
yeah.
Was flashing that graphic basically every time the Rockets had the ball. It's like it's been X amount of time since they've last scored a point. And that's something I'm only used to watching when I'm watching college basketball.
Yes.
Where they
they put the run up on the screen, whatever happens to
one team hasn't scored in 7 minutes, and yet it's still a 4-point game for some reason. So, yeah, to have this win that looks very comprehensive, and the fact that they basically punted an entire quarter, that does speak to the upside that this team has.
Yeah, and it's not just the way that they won the game, but it's also who stepped up in the win.
Yes.
Jalen Green has been maddeningly, I did not say that word correctly. We're just going to move on past that. Jalen Green's been incredibly inconsistent this season. He's had some really nice highs, and then the lows have looked pretty awful at various points throughout the year. But yesterday was another one of those high points for him, and it's been exciting to see what we think he can become in and it seems like the stretches have become slightly more consistent as the season has gone along. Yes. When we got 4 or 5 games in, I was really worried because what we were seeing from Jalen Green was like, I don't know if he's going to be able to play within structure, within a team where Ime is really trying to drill these principles into these guys, and it's become so clear what he's trying to accomplish. But as the season has progressed and gone along, Jalen Green has slowly but surely looked better and better. And last night was one of the better games that I think he's had in a Rockets uniform.
Yes, Jalen Green has been the leading scorer, I think,
13 times of the 19 games this season, and he has been the leading scorer, I think, in 7 of the 10 wins. So, like you said, the highs are high. Like, when he's on, this team is really good. Because, on the other hand of the kind of roller coaster that you get with Jalen Green, you have really the ultimate consistency in Alperen Sengun, a guy who did not have a particularly eye-popping game. You watched him, and you're like, yeah, this is pretty okay Sengun game. And he had 17 points, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists.
Would he be someone to you that would be near the top of the leaderboard to possibly win Most Improved Player?
Most Improved is always...
That's usually like a... I mean, I say it's not old. It's like, what, is year 3 for him, year 4?
They do give it to some young guys. It is just like a weird award. So off the top of my head, there's no one that's really jumping out to me. So I you know what? Yes, Sengun, your leader in the clubhouse for Most Improved Player. As I try to think of other players in the NBA that have improved a lot, I cannot think of any, because really Sengun has taken the step from interesting young player to, honestly, and I thought this was ridiculous, the
best
first
player.
No, not just that. The first 10 games of the season, I saw some Rockets Twitter people that are always excited, always ready to pump some tires, and I'm always ready to pump the brakes on whatever they're saying just naturally. And they started a Alperen Sengun All-Star campaign, and I was like, listen guys, it's November 3rd, this is a little early.
Now get on board, Sean, it's time.
Now on December 9th, I'm ready. He should make the All-Star team. I honestly cannot... Well, I can see a world where he doesn't make it, but I don't see a world where he doesn't deserve to make the All-Star team. That, to me, is really, so far, more so than anything Udoka himself has done, you know, culturally with the team. Him going from the way Steven Silas ran the offense through Jalen Green and through Kevin Porter Jr. to now in crunch time moments, you know the ball. And that's honestly why they struggled to score in the fourth quarter. They kind of went away from this last night. Is when the Rockets need a bucket, it is Fred VanVleet throwing an entry pass to Alperen Sengun, who's posting up, which I know warms Brian McDonald's heart that the art of the post-up is still alive and well.
Yeah,
in
dump it down low and then kick it out. That's right.
Yes, exactly. Hey, that's how the Rockets won their championships 30 years ago.
That was not a very subtle shot at my age. Thanks, Sean.
But, I mean, Sengun being this type of player is ultimately what can lead them to being, what Andrew said, a play-in caliber
team. 7-8 seed. Maybe they're sniffing the 6th seed if we get lucky.
Sniffing that 6th seed.
Yeah, I don't know why you got to sniff that. You made it all weird, Andrew.
I mean, what else would you do with the seed?
I'm going to move.
Water. They're going to be water in the 6th
Depending
sixth
on what
seed.
Type of seed it is, you might eat it.
That is true.
Like a sunflower seed, you might chew on it.
Yeah, so right now, I've just pulled up the standings. The Rockets sitting at 9-10. This season, good for the 8th seed.
The old playoff format before the playing game, they would still be in the playoffs right now. I mean, as the 8th seed, they would still be in. And I agree with you guys. I think the standard has been raised, or the expectation has been raised a little bit from just make it, you know, a playing game. Because when you look at the teams they beat, it's not just that they're an 8th seed right now, but the teams they beat, the Thunder, the 2nd seed, you go 3-1 against the defending champion Nuggets, who are the 4th seed. You've got to win against the Lakers, who are the 5th seed. You've got 2 wins against the Kings, who are the 6th seed. It's not just, you know, oh, you're one game above 500 and you're the 8th seed, but you're actually beating basically all the teams in front of you.
That is a good point, because according to Tankathon, the Rockets right now have the 28th hardest schedule remaining in the NBA. So they have the
front-loaded, yeah.
They have the 3rd easiest, which, I mean, like Andrew said, all they do is play the Lakers and Nuggets, so that makes sense why they're high up there. But they do have, you know, they have remaining games against the T-Wolves, who are the 1 seed. They have some games against the Celtics. But actually, they just played the entire Eastern Conference now. That's all they have left is the Minnesota and the Eastern Conference. Those are all their toughest games.
That used to be a good thing. The Eastern Conference is a little bit better now. But that's part of the reason why, for me at least, the start of the season has been so exciting. Not only because they've exceeded all of my expectations, but also because of the fact that they've done it relatively frequently against teams that are pretty decent. They've done it against teams that in years past I would have just gone into the game expecting a 10 to 15 point loss. And instead, the Rockets are more often than not, especially at home, coming out with a win. And if they're able to continue that sort of level of play against some of the dregs of the Western Conference, you know, the Spurs, for instance.
Who they've lost to.
That was game two.
That was game two early on. Yeah, it was game two.
I can't wait for those Pistons games. They've lost like 19 games in a row.
They've lost 19 games in a row.
So I'm excited, man. It's going to be a fun NBA season for the first time in God knows how long.
Yes. Like Andrew said, the next up for the Rockets are those San Antonio Spurs riding a 16-game losing streak, a 1-6-game losing streak.
How many games have they won since they beat the Rockets? Two. Have they lost out? Okay.
I mean, I guess. They're 3-18, so one of those wins is against the Rockets. So coming up next for the Rockets is the San Antonio Spurs. And coming up next for the bullpen, it's old pal from the dealer departed wheelhouse. This is so, really us throwing a bone for Andrew. You know, every
what
day,
do you mean?
Every day he looks at his little picture of the,
what is he, the Wolverine?
of the old wheelhouse. And a single tear runs down his cheek. Well, now, we're throwing him a bone.
Now this is for you two Longhorns blowhards. All right. Don't frame it.
We're throwing bones to everyone. Everyone's getting a bone. Cause Brad Kellner
phrasing
Brad Kellner. From Texas Sports Unfiltered is next on the bullpen. ESPN 97.5, 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You're hooked up with it.
You hooked up with it. You decided to marry it. I told you I wasn't into it. You said it didn't matter.